Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very, very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called, ouch, caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty every time I say it. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Sharon Uloff, caregiver, abuse survivor, international child advocate, will be talking about caregiving, burnout, and the grief process. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and they're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time I say this, you board a plane, they start to talk about the emergency procedures, you tune them out, but you know what? They're telling you that you have to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason is because you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch! Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. There's no shortcuts. There's no cutting around. You can't go over it, under it. You got to go through it. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and the show and my radio podcast and my books and my videos and my blog. Every time I say this, it just sounds like it's all about me, but it's not all about me. It's all about you. So just go to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, DaveNass.com. And you know what? The actual name of our show also works, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. So go to my website, take the free quiz. It's called Are You a Candidate for Burnout? I mean, isn't that a good thing to know? It will assess where you are in the burnout process. And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free copy of my ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. It's still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will really assess where you are in the burnout process, like I said. And besides that, you get my free book, just for doing that. And Amazon is selling it for almost $10, so it's a great value. Hey, I want to take this moment to thank my guest last week, Adrian Gruberg, talking about the amazing website and Facebook page she developed for caregivers to utilize. It's called The Caregiver Space, and it's on thecaregiverspace.org. Now, to hear this powerful interview, just go to davenass.com, find the podcast, or go to iTunes under Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver. I think it's in the Uplifting Interviews tab on my website. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now, Sharon. And welcome to the show, Sharon. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all the introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
Oh, my pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. The honor is ours. I just want to thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I know your story will really bless my caregiver listening audience. And you've been faithfully and passionately serving your father-in-law, which you call your father-in-love, for about 4 years until his passing from dementia, among other things. So let's just get right into it. I want to ask you some questions. Why don't you just take a moment and briefly introduce yourself tell us who you are, what you do, maybe before you were a caregiver. Go ahead.
Well, you know, to give you a brief background, because I don't want to take up a lot of time with that, I started in child development. I was on the track to becoming a teacher, K-12, severely emotionally disturbed kids.
Mm-hmm.
Lasted only 5 years before I realized, talk about burnout, that was, I was done. I had to figure out what else I'd like to do, which was math, so I went into accounting, which led me into entertainment, blah, 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 office management, HR. Did HR for about 15 years, and when I left my last HR post, we very specifically crafted an online role for me so that I could go wherever our aging parents are going. My family is complex. I have many folks that I consider parental units. So,
really?
There were not only my husband's folks, but my stepfather, who's actually no longer married to my mom, so it makes things very confusing. But he was just diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he's 70.
Oh,
so I went to spend time with them in the south of France a year ago, last December. And then
wow.
My mom had shoulder surgery. She tore a rotator cuff. She was in Guatemala and thought it might be a good idea to catch a falling suitcase. But no, not so much. I, you know, was in D.C. for a week to be with her while she was at the beginning part of her surgery and recovery with my father-in-law. So we very specifically crafted this so that I could work anywhere. There was a good internet connection. You know, we've been lucky enough to be able to help some friends of ours do the same thing so that they can have that life as well.
Wow, you sound like a very functional family. You just take your your needs and you make it work in your environment. That's a gift. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Why don't you introduce your husband as well? I know he's not there, but I mean, tell us who he is, and because we're going to be talking about his father, right?
We are going to be talking about his father, and my husband is Hank Uloff. Mm-hmm. He is our marketing guy. And his business has been, for longer than I've been involved with it, has been marketing strategy, company, promotional products, lots of strategies. Promotional products is one of them. So he's been focused a lot on offline and moving on to online, and so we're sort of working that way together. It's kind of cool.
So you're both kind of into marketing, right?
We are.
Were you that way when you met, or you became that way after you met? Or what's the story?
You know,
on
he
that?
Has always been in marketing. That he does. He just wakes up with a marketing brain. I've had to learn it over the decades. The online stuff really intrigued me, and so learning about online marketing and social media and funnels, and it's to me that's all very cool and fun, and I love that stuff.
So he's the offline guy, and you're the online gal.
Yeah, it doesn't break quite that cleanly. It certainly started very much like that, but he's learning a lot of the online and I'm learning a lot of the offline. So there is, you know, more and more overlap as we go through this dance together.
Wow. Well, that's why you're so good, because you do marketing. Now, you spoke about being an abuse survivor. How did this affect your caregiving responsibilities or make them more challenging?
My abuse was both child physical abuse and sexual abuse, not with the same people, not with the same men. It was all men. It did happen from the time I was 10 until I was about 16.
My.
What that means in the caregiving role is, at least in this particular, I don't want to generalize to all caregiving, but for this particular, is my father-in-law had dementia. Unfortunately, most folks that go through dementia often have a personality change. So although I knew him as a very gentle soul, he had moments where he was very assertive and aggressive and nasty. And it triggered lots of issues. There were quite a few times where I can't have this conversation with you right now. I got to go take a walk. And I would go in the bathroom and cry, or, you know, I would walk around the building or whatever it is I needed to do. But I think those who did not go through the kinds of things that I went through probably would not have had the same triggers. They may have had different triggers, but
sure.
You know, not the same triggers.
Now, when
And then the other layer was that because there was sexual abuse as well, there were times when he would mistake me for my mother-in-law, who's been dead for 12 years.
Really?
And so it was a little creepy. You know, he would make these advances and, you know, he'd tell me he's lonely. And I'd say, well, what can I do to make you less lonely? Well, you could climb into bed with me. I was like, yeah, you know, if I didn't know you had dementia, that would just be creepy. So I kind of had to get past that and realize that it was actually quite an honor to be able to see after 60 years, you know, in his mind, they were still married because he'd forgotten that she had passed on. So after 60 years that he still had that kind of passion and care and compassion for her. I mean, there are plenty of times when he said, I don't mean to be nasty to you. I know that there's no mean bone in your body and you just mean well. It just came over me. You know, or he'd just look at me, or he'd grab my hand, or he'd kiss my hand. It was very sweet, but I know that it wasn't really meant for me. It was really meant for her. But it was quite an honor to be able to see that in his eyes, that, you know, thinking that Mom was probably the only one that ever saw that. You know, maybe the kids saw it when they were little, but they wouldn't have really got what they were seeing, you know?
Well, that certainly is looking at it with a positive spin. When he would be mean or almost abusive, did he know that you were you, or did he think you were someone else, or what? Because my mother has dementia, and fortunately she hasn't gotten to that point, because some people says, yes, sometimes they get violent, sometimes they get nasty. But my mother's still kind of sweet. She did get violent one time when they tried to put her in a hospital and tried to restrain her, and she, like, scratched an orderly, and she was, you know, she was in a strange environment with strange people, so she was feeling like she had to defend herself, but she hasn't really had anything like that. But did she think you were someone else when she was being mean or violent? I mean, I'm sorry.
You know, honestly, I don't know. I never really asked him, you know, do you know who I am? I never asked him those kind of questions. I kind of took it from the context. So, you know, I don't know. Was I just another nurse at that point? I honestly have no idea who he thought I was. I just knew that what he was saying was just not.
And he would probably be drifting in and out of reality, you know, one moment being okay and the next moment being who knows where, I would guess.
Right, yeah. Yes, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, dementia is so challenging, and we are so fortunate that my mother is still very sweet. She still remembers us. We have her in an assisted living place in Glendale. Very, very nice place. And she gets lonely a lot, and she talks about wanting to go home to see God and things like that. She doesn't eat very well, and she loses weight. And sometimes she didn't eat so well that she started like acting like a zombie, just staring into space and, you know, just like dehydrated till we got some food in her. Then she kind of came back to life, like kind of like a flower wilts when you don't give it, give it water. Can I ask you, you had the privilege of having a relationship with your in-laws or your in-loves for about 2 decades now. That's a long time. What kind of people were they, and why did you fall in love with them so passionately? You know, usually there's those mother-in-law, father-in-law jokes because in-laws usually don't get along very well, but here you are, just the opposite. Explain that.
You know, I got lucky. I don't know how else to say it. By the time I met them, they were already retired. My husband, Hank, is only 5 years older than I am, but his parents are 20 years older than my parents.
Really?
Yeah. They were, you know, older when they had him. He's the youngest, whereas my folks were young when they got started, and I'm the eldest. So they were already retired. They were already enjoying a retirement life of cruising and doing it was they wanted to do.
They were more like your grandparents almost, huh? In age, anyway.
Yeah, in age, maybe. Not really, but in age, yeah, I suppose. But they were very open and welcoming and loving, and they were just, they're just amazing people. I mean, I don't really know how to describe them.
Well, they must have loved you very much.
Yeah, and
it worked both ways. Yeah, some parents actually fall in love with the in-laws more than their own child. But I'm sure that wasn't the case with Hank.
Not with Hank.
Well, that's so nice that you were able to get along with your in-laws well, because it is really stressful. I mean, caregiving is stressful enough, but then to have in-law problems and family dynamics with siblings and stuff like that, because many, many times the siblings don't see things equally. For example, maybe you have 3 or 4 siblings, and one of them is usually, thank God, very compassionate, very empathetic and sympathetic, and they're the ones who usually step up to the bat to be the caregiver. And the other two is like, oh, we're so glad that you're taking care of Mom, but we just don't have time. You know, we're doing our thing and this and that. It's sad, and I do realize that some siblings maybe don't have the gifts for caregiving, but there are always things that siblings can do. They can come in and give you a break for a couple hours to maybe take a bath or go to Starbucks or go shopping, or maybe 4 or 5 hours to go to a movie or dinner, or maybe
have
a weekend to go on a cruise or a nap. For those of you out there who do have those kind of siblings who maybe aren't very helpful, you might just say, listen, I understand that you don't have time. I understand that you live far away or whatever. Send some money and I can get some help so that, really, and they will gladly send the money because they probably feel so bad about not being able to help. So
there were certainly days where we hired a private nurse through an agency that happens to be a client of ours. They would come and they would sit with Dad for 6 hours or something on a Friday, Saturday.
Yes, and we'll talk more about burnout after the break. So we're coming up on a break now. Don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Sharon. Sharon, thank you so much again for agreeing to this interview. I just am so grateful that you took the time to do it at last-minute notice. Let's continue with our questions. Tell us what it was like when your mom in love.
Don't you love that? We just learned that, and I took it on.
Well, that's why I'm using it. So, your mom in love passed away. Tell us what it was like when she passed away, and the grief that you and Hank experienced.
That was pretty awful. The May before she passed, she started having some stomach issues. They had a really hard time figuring out what it was, and they were saying it was IBS, and which I suffer from, so I was trying to give her some tips. And it took all the way until February, where she was throwing up and delusional and just awful, for the ER doctor, who actually figured out that it was ovarian cancer.
How old was
so
she now?
At that point, she was 76.
Still young.
Yeah. So within, 3 weeks, they had surgery scheduled. They came out after surgery, and they told us that she made it through surgery, but they weren't able to get it all, and she would have to go through all of these rounds of chemo and blah, blah, blah. But they let us know when we can go see her. And hours passed before they came back out and said, we just have not been able to get her blood pressure up, and she has not had oxygen to her brain in a really long time.
Mm.
So we're moving her up to ICU. You guys had some difficult decisions to make.
Wow.
so we did. Even after we took her off of everything, still she fought still. I mean, the only thing that was left was the morphine, but everything else was out. That, you know, they, and it still took her 18 hours to let go.
Oh.
And it was a grueling 18 hours, you know. We see this stuff on television, you know, ER and Grey's Anatomy. You know,
sure.
you unplug them and poof, they're gone. And it just did not happen that way. And we were not prepared for it not to happen that way.
Oh,
and
my God.
I would say there was one nurse that would come in every now and then and say, you know, I think she looks like she's uncomfortable. I'm going to dial up the morphine. Is that okay? Oh, yes, please. That's a great idea. So that was very helpful. Otherwise, we just didn't know what to do. It was our first encounter, and we just were dumbfounded. And we had been up for hours, and I had spent the night with her before mm-hmm. in the hospital. So I had been up for even more hours, and it was just, it was awful. And to lose her that fast and that quick and unexpected, and it was, we had always thought that the dad would go first, and even mm-hmm. they thought that, so they had a long-term care insurance for her, but they didn't have it for dad. Yeah, he didn't qualify. He still already had a disability, he didn't qualify. It was not the way any of us had pictured life going, so it was, we still think about it. Life would be very different if she were with us.
So he had dementia when this happened, right?
No, that was about a dozen years ago. He didn't start showing signs of dementia until 5 years ago.
Hmm. So how did he take the passing of his wife?
You know, it was tough. It was, in some ways, it was very tough. I mean, he he's a guy, and B, he's an introvert. So he, mm-hmm. you know, how did he really take it? You know, we'll probably never really know. What we saw was he was very quick to get rid of the clothes. What happened was that after she passed, Hank came back. They lived in San Diego, and Hank came back to Los Angeles to deal with the burial. They, for those of you that are listening, they did the best gift ever. They had planned. They had purchased their plot. They had planned their funeral. Mm-hmm. There was nothing to do except to go to Mount Sinai and say, okay, she's gone now. What do I do? And they took care of everything. The only mm-hmm. thing that was a glitch, if you can call it that, people will laugh, is that the casket she had picked out was no longer available, and the next closest one was $13 more. So Hank had to actually write a check for $13. Like, really? Good grief. Yeah. So he came up and did that, and I stayed with Dad because we just couldn't imagine for Dad to be alone in the house suddenly after all these years. He's been married 52 years at that point.
Was he the typical helpless male who didn't know how to cook or clean? Or
Pretty much. Pretty much. Not completely, but pretty much. So that we got rid of all of her clothes, but the rest of the house looked the same until the day that we moved him into assisted living. If she had come back from the dead, she would know where everything was. She would have been naked because all her clothes were gone, but everything else was exactly the same. He stayed and lived in Mom's house for as long as we would let him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I bet he was very appreciative of that.
Yeah.
So how was that experience, the passing of Hank's mother, different from the passing of his father? And how was your grief different, or his grief, or how was it different?
It was different in that with Dad, we certainly had warning. You know, we had lots of time to think about lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
We had times to ask him things. I mean, certainly those times got less and less as the dementia took over more and more of his brain. But we had lots of time, you know, to ask and to say everything we wanted to say, to ask the questions we wanted to ask, to plan things, to, you know, fantasize about things, to all of those. It was really different. And then, of course, the struggle over his last 129 days was really quite different from the struggle that we went with Mom, who was so fat.
Wow.
And the only reason I know it's 129 days is because Medicare is nice enough to tell us that they only pay for the first 100 days. So I knew when the 100th day was up, but I just had to count after that.
Yes, familiar with that 100-day thing when my mother was in there. All these hoops that you have to jump through, they will only pay for a nursing home for 100 days. Listen, I know this is all still very fresh and you're probably still grieving. Where are you in that process, and how long do you expect to go through the grieving process before reaching acceptance? I know that's a difficult question to ask because everyone is different and everyone has a different definition of grief. And so whatever that means for you and Hank, what are you thinking?
I don't know. We don't have a crystal ball. Do you have a crystal ball? I don't.
Mine is dirty.
Exactly. I just don't know. You know, I know with, when Mom passed, it was much more intense at the beginning. At least it's my experience. You know, maybe Hank would say differently, but mm-hmm. I don't think so. And I think with both of them, though, it sort of comes in waves. You know, you kind of think, oh, okay, you know, we're past the whatever. We're past the week of when mm-hmm. he passed, right? And then it'll be the week of from the funeral. You know, so there's like all these things. And then we're also Jewish. So then there's the year after where you do the unveiling of the headstone. So I remember when we were dealing with Mom's headstone, you know, we were able to ignore it for many months. And then it was suddenly like, oh, we have to order the headstone. We have to figure out what we want it to say. And it's like all of this angst that comes back because of that.
Right, right.
And then the going to the site and doing the unveiling. Just, I don't know. It takes at least a year, but some days and some moments. Even just today, I had to travel in the direction. I had to travel. Mm-hmm. I had an option as to which route I should take. It suddenly went, oh, wait, that route was faster. And then as I started on that route, I went, oh, this is really stupid because I'm going in the same way that I went every single day for 129. Mm-hmm. It was like, I really don't want to be on this road right now. But I was already on it. I couldn't, there was nothing I could do about it. So I just kind of had to like fuck it up and deal with it. But I would have, if I had thought far enough ahead, I would have made a different choice.
Yeah.
So it's just things like that.
I'm so sorry that I have to ask these questions. I feel like the paparazzi who's shoving a microphone in somebody's face, you know, 5 minutes after someone dies. So how does it feel? I don't want to be that guy. I'm just thinking of my caregiving audience. Many
Absolutely.
Of them have gone through and are going through, and or maybe tomorrow will go through
exactly
what you went through. And a lot of them are clueless as to this whole concept of grief and the grief process, and they just don't get it. And basically, there are five stages of the grief process. The first one is kind of denial. Oh, my God, this isn't happening. You know, we just, the brain can't catch up with reality. So mm-hmm. there's a disbelief that what's happening, and sometimes we act out as if it wasn't happening. And obviously, that's just a temporary thing, because if it continued to go on, you would be defined as psychotic and living in a fantasy yeah. world. But fortunately, reality helps us to get out of denial kind of quickly, because if we don't, like I said, we've got some problems. And the next stage is usually anger. And, you know, who do you get angry with? I don't know. You get angry with your spouse, with your mother, with the hospital, with the paramedic. Somebody didn't do something right. You just get angry at anybody and everybody. And after you realize that getting angry doesn't really help, then you start looking at a way to bargain or negotiate your way out of this. Well, it's one thing if a lover, you know, gets broken up with, broken heart with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and they go back because they're heartbroken of the loss, and they say, well, can't we work something out? No. Well, can't we still be friends? You know, you're trying to negotiate this loss. But when you're dealing with death or cancer or something like this, you know, the only one that you can really negotiate with is maybe God, and maybe get angry or whatever. So there's that bargaining thing there. And then when you realize that bargaining doesn't really help, then a lot of people go into depression and they just don't know what to do. They see no reason to get out of bed. They see no reason to dress. They see no reason to eat. Suicidal, no hope. And then finally, when you realize that depression isn't doing anything positive, you come to the realization of acceptance and say, okay, well, life moves on. This is dying is part of living, and loss is part of life. And so I just have to move on and leave that behind me. And you have some sort of acceptance, and acceptance is different for everybody. With that background, did you feel some of the denial? Did you feel some of the anger? Did you feel some of the bargaining, some of the depression? I don't think you're in acceptance yet, because you're still kind of going through it. It's too fresh. But what's your perspective on that? Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
Yeah, no, it's all right. I don't know where I am on that continuum, because I think it's still so new that it changes.
Right.
I think a lot of the time it feels like acceptance. Mm-hmm. Again, because we had so long to prepare.
Right.
So I do think that, at least my experience, you know, someone else may say something completely different, but my experience has been, with that kind of time to prepare, it's easier to get to the acceptance when it finally actually happens.
Yes.
Than when it's a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, people would ask me at the funeral, how are you doing? And my answer was, I'm compartmentalizing very well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
So for all I know, that's still what's happening, and I just don't, you know, looking back, I'll realize that that's what it was, as opposed to really being accepted.
And you are a caregiver. You know, I'm a caregiver to my wife for 19 years, and I always wonder, because one day she's going to die. One day we're all going to die. I might die before her. Who knows? But she lost her speech from a stroke, so she hasn't spoken in 19 years,
mm-hmm.
In sentences, rather. She's a very good communicator because she uses gestures and sounds and facial and all of that stuff. And she's paralyzed on her right side. But, you know, she, after a two-year grieving process, and anger was a big part of that, she decided that she's going to reinvent herself and she's going to do everything she did before because she was an amazing woman, just like Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman rolled into one. She decided that she's going to go back and do a gourmet cooking party and invite people over because she did all of that magnificently. And one by one, she started accomplishing the tasks that she used to accomplish with two arms and two legs and a mouth. And she did it with basically one arm, one leg tied behind her back. So I know that it's difficult. And what... I totally lost my train of thought.
Totally
lost where I was going with that. And it was really good, too. Well, you know what? We're going to take a break, and I'm sure my memory will come back when we come back from the break. So don't go away. We will be right back.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a two-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we are back with Sharon Yuloff, caregiver. And I remembered what I was trying to say before the break.
Awesome.
Welcome to live radio. I was trying to say that caregivers, actually, in my opinion, and what I've found, because I'm a caregiver, is that I think we take grief much better after the death of our loved one as opposed to while they're still alive. And here's my theory about that. Because for many, and it's not just me, it's for many, many others, you and I are kind of lucky because as bad as, you know, the passing of your mother-in-law and the dementia of your father-in-law, a lot of people really have it bad out there. Some of the stories that I hear of the things they have to put up with of their care receiver are just unfathomable to me. And I'm so, I just don't know how they do it. They are amazing, amazing people, caregivers. A lot of the grief the caregiver is experiencing like this, they're experiencing because they've lost their freedom. That's a loss. They've lost a dear friend. Like, I've lost the ability to communicate verbally with my wife. That's a loss. So you know, there was a grief process for me. And whatever the loss is for the caregiver, they're grieving. And a lot of times, many of them feel like they're in prison because they can't get away. They have no help. Nobody will come by. There's no money to spend on help, et cetera. When that care receiver actually dies, because they're usually in poor health, but when they die, it's almost like this burden is released from their shoulders. And they, very shortly after that, come to acceptance, because now it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't have to worry about them anymore. I don't have to watch them going through the pain. I don't have to watch them suffer anymore. So a lot of the things that was causing them to grieve is over. What I was going to say about you is maybe the reason you're doing so well in the grief process is because things are lifting up, the burdens, and watching the pain and watching the suffering of the two people that you love are basically kind of over. Now they're not suffering anymore. They're in a better place. And therefore, you're in a better place. So that's right. My theory, and I'm sticking to it. What do you think?
That sounds good. I'd go with that. The chance to grieve, you know, especially with someone like something like dementia, you know, the person that we knew has been gone for 4 or 5 years now. So we've been doing grievings and goodbyes along the way as we've lost more and more of who he really was. In some ways, this is sort of a relief. I know that may sound cold, but...
No.
But it is. Okay.
Dementia is an interesting disease because I was reading a book about it, and I'm sorry that I can't remember the exact name of the book, but it talks about there's many opportunities to just be so depressed that the person you're caring for has dementia because maybe they don't recognize you anymore. Maybe they're nasty to you. Maybe they're just a total different individual than the person they used to be. But the point is, according to this book, they still remember you, even though they act like they don't. Because what happens in the brain is the brain goes to a place where it was younger and younger and younger.
Right.
So they may remember you when you were 17 years old. And they maybe don't recognize this older person who has gray hair and obviously looks much older. So they've done actually experiments where dementia patient's spouse is on the other side of a door talking to her. This person usually doesn't recognize her husband, doesn't know who he is, but all of a sudden she recognized his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And when she opened the door, she was shocked and says, well, who are you? You know, where'd my husband go? Because she remembers her husband as this good-looking, six-pack guy with a wavy head of hair, and all of a sudden this old guy, bald and fat, you know, is standing on the other side of the door, and she just can't put two and two together.
Well,
so the
dementia
point
also messes with the logic, so that falls in there as well.
So the point of the book is that the best that you can hope to have for with your dementia patients is to have moments.
Yeah.
And what's a moment? A moment might be 10 seconds of a glance, a smile, a memory that you shared. Like, hey, do you remember when we were kids, we used to make forts with the blankets and we used to have flashlights and pretend that we were out camping, and all of a sudden, boom, that memory comes back to them and they start laughing and saying, yeah, you know, and they might even bring up something that you forgot. My mother does this all the time. And it might only last 45 seconds. And then, boom, it's gone. And they said, what were we talking about?
Exactly.
You know what? You shared a moment with them. And
and
the cool thing is that moment is going to stay with them. They may be peaceful the whole rest of the night and, in fact, the whole rest of the week because they don't even know why, but all of a sudden this peace has come over them, and it's because they had a moment. So you have to always look for these opportunities to share moments or to bring up memories that they might remember. It's true that they may not remember what you just said 5 seconds ago, but I bet you they'll remember what happened 20 years ago and 30 years ago and 40 years ago. And so try to have moments with your dementia loved one, because it'll be very, very rewarding for you, and especially for them, especially if they're to the point where they don't even recognize you anymore. And that movie, I love that movie, The Notebook, James Garner, that just makes me cry every single time I watch it, because it's just so classic. And one minute, you know, she's dancing with her husband and says, let's get out of here. Let's get in our car and just drive and drive and drive. And then the next second, she's going, who are you? What are you doing in my room? I don't know you. So it's so sad. It's so sad. It it's heartbreaking to hear some of the stories. I can't even read a lot of them because it's just too hard. And so, and I'm the caregiver's caregiver. It's even hard for me. So God
bless.
Is the
book that you read, was it the 36-hour day?
That doesn't sound familiar. No, does that one talk about moments?
Yeah, but it talks about dementia and moments and all various things.
Well, it could be, but, you know, maybe she doesn't have a monopoly on the idea. She might have heard it from somewhere else and whatever. I'm sure if you Google out there, everybody, if you Google moments, dementia, book, maybe at least three or four of them will come up and you can review them. But I recommend that for anybody who's dealing with someone with dementia. And me, you know, I'm like the sandwich generation, because the first slice of bread is my mother with her dementia. The second slice of bread is my wife with her post-stroke.
Right.
And if I was a little younger and I had children living at home, then there'd be a third slice of bread, and that's called a club sandwich.
No kidding. You know, the other thing that we thought of often when we were dealing with my father-in-law's dementia was Maya Angelou saying, you know, people will forget what you said, but they won't forget how you made them feel. And it ties into what you said before. They may not remember why they have a feeling of peace, but it's because they shared that memory.
Yeah. And so did you, I'm sure you did, maybe you want to share some moments that you had with your father-in-law before he passed away?
They were just some tender moments. But again, I never was sure how many of them were really me and how many of them was I really mom at the moment. So,
right.
So I just tried to channel her as best as I could. And
And I'm sure that was very
him as I possibly could, and you know those moments where when he could no longer feed himself, and to feed him, and you know to do it at a slow enough pace that he didn't feel rushed, because he often felt like the nursing staff when they would feed him that they were rushing him. He was he was slow beforehand. He was a very gentle, methodical guy anyway, so this just made it even more so.
No, and you did a very compassionate thing when those times when he thought that you were his wife. You know, you had a choice. You could have either said, no, I'm not her. She's gone. She's been dead for 12 years. How do you think that would make him feel? But instead, you kind of played the role. You kind of made him feel good and made him feel safe and made him feel that everything was all right. Which way do you think you should do it? Obviously, I would go for the latter one. And that's
the way I would want it. So.
Yeah. I would want someone to do that if I was kind of clueless and if I thought something was going to happen, or something was supposed to happen a certain way, I would hope that whoever was caring for me would humor me so that I can be happy.
Yeah.
So I fortunately was young enough where I bought a long-term care policy. So that if anything happens to me as far as dementia or anything like that, God forbid, I have a long-term care plan, and it pays $400 a day.
Oh,
and that's a lot. That's a lot of money. So
that's
I just tell them, stick me down in Malibu somewhere facing the ocean, and I'll be fine. You don't even have to visit very often. I said, yes, you do.
We did that too. I think it was after that mom passed. We did that too.
Well, let me ask you another question. So, what is life like after the passing of your parents, your in-laws? Is it too soon to tell?
No. No, it's not, because we've been planning it.
Well, good for you. Let that be a lesson to everyone. Plan for it.
We were both kind of sick with Los Angeles, and we knew we wanted to leave, and we've been traveling for decades now. So every time we would travel, is this the place we would retire to? Is this the place we could retire to? So we found a place that we really love, but we knew that we couldn't leave while Dad was still around. Now that Dad's only around spiritually and not physically, we're free to go. So we actually are taking a trip middle of next month for a week to go house hunting in Sedona.
Oh, Arizona.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. And you enjoy the heat there, right? The dry heat.
You know, but Sedona is northern part, so it doesn't
not
get as
so hot
as Phoenix. And in fact, gets a little bit of snow in the wintertime.
That's good. The only part of Arizona I was at was Tempe in the summertime, and it was 130.
Oh, yeah, that's grueling.
It was a very nice resort, but it was very, very hot. Thank God for air conditioning.
Exactly.
So let's talk about now the main topic of my show. Did you ever experience the dreaded caregiver burnout? And if so, share.
I did, but only in, it was moments. You know, it wasn't days and weeks and all of that. It was moments of, I just can't imagine that we're going to deal with this for, you know, whatever. Okay, well, I guess we are, so next. And I had little milestones along the way that I was shooting for example. We knew when the 100th day was, right? And we knew, at first we didn't think he'd make 100 days. So when we realized that, okay, it looks like he is going to make 100 days, we kind of had to make a plan as to, well, what are we going to do after the 100 days expire? So we had those things to sort of plan for and look forward to. And like I said, he planned financially well enough that we could use some of those funds to pay for someone to come sit with him, you know, Friday
That's
and Saturday
great.
Afternoons and evenings so that I could take a break so we could go have see a movie, have dinner, you know, be a couple. And we did that most every weekend, not quite ever, and certainly not at the end, you know. It felt really cruel. There was one really favorite caregiver that he had, and we were fine with leaving Dad with that caregiver, but we didn't want to hire some stranger. It just felt wrong to have him pass. You know, we knew that he could pass in the middle of the night and we wouldn't be there and blah, blah, blah. But to purposefully arrange it so that a stranger was there when we could have been there, it just felt wrong. It just felt wrong. So for the last, his final 2 weeks, we were there. Even Hank was there almost all the time, every day, all day, just because we couldn't imagine, you know, allowing him to pass without one of us being there, unless it's really what he wanted. You know, he certainly could have chosen that. But so, yes, there were moments of burnout. But it was, you know, I suppose if it's years and years, that lends a different flavor. You know, it was years and years, but most of the time he was with assisted living, and we would see him once a week. And, you know, it just wasn't all that, it wasn't that big of a burden. You know, the burden really happened in the last 129 days. And I suppose if that kind of a thing went on for years and years, I probably would have felt it differently. And but it was moments.
Good. In those last moments, how aware was he? Was he there? I mean, the real Bud? Would he slip in and out, or was he totally gone?
The last week?
Yeah, the last week or so.
No, he was completely unresponsive that last week. We saw some reactions to things, you know, a loud noise or when the sublingual medication was put in his mouth. But they were reactions. They weren't really responses. So no, he was completely unresponsive from Wednesday afternoon until he passed the following Tuesday afternoon.
So when would you say was the last time that he was like there and you said your goodbyes and he knew who you were briefly and he knew, you know, maybe that he was going to die and he was okay with it? Any of that happen?
He did not want to know that he was dying.
Really?
At one point, Hank asked if he wanted to know the prognosis and he said no. And that was just a few weeks beforehand.
Well, at least he had awareness to know that he didn't want to know.
Yeah, he didn't want to know. You know, you mentioned the not eating and earlier, and he would do that, and we would try to encourage him to eat. And, you know, if you don't eat, then your pressure ulcer won't heal, and all these things will happen, and you'll die. And he would say, no, you're exaggerating. I won't die for 3 more years. So he either was oblivious or was just purposefully pushing it aside and not wanting to deal with it. As far as we know, he didn't know. What was happening internally during that week where he was really basically in a coma, I don't know.
Well, we're almost done with our interview. What did you learn from this whole process? It's like the Wizard of Oz. So what did you learn, Dorothy, that you can share with our caregivers so that they can glean off of your much-earned wisdom?
Well, you know, some of it I've shared as far as the abuse survivor issues that maybe not everyone deals with. And then I also wrote a blog post about death always being a surprise. That even with all the planning, even with all of that, you know, the moment that it's going to happen, the way it's going to happen, it's a surprise. When Mom passed away after 18 hours, it was a gradual slowing of her respiration, so we knew we were getting there. I thought I would have that warning with Dad. Hank had someplace he needed to be, and I thought I would have that warning to be able to tell him, okay, he's having problems, you should get here. And I didn't. He went from 22 respirations a minute to nothing, and he was gone in 5 minutes. There was no way. I started to type a text. I couldn't even finish the text to Hank.
Wow.
So, you know, it's always a surprise. Often they choose to let go when the person they're closest to is not there. He passed right after a nurse asked me, is Hank coming? And I said, well, he'll be here in about an hour. And he was gone 5 minutes later.
Wow.
And I don't think it's a surprise. I think that he's like, oh, well, I better go before he comes. It's too hard to do it. And Mom left the same way. When she finally let go was when Dad left to go take a nap. He just could not stay awake any longer. He had to go take a nap. And that's when she let go.
Well, thank you again for agreeing to do this. Take the last couple of minutes and please explain again what it is that you and Hank do now in your business and how people can get a hold of you if they need your services or they need a marketing person online or offline.
Yeah, we have a marketing strategy company that incorporates a number of strategies, and we focus it on what the specific business owner needs, as well as helping those budding solopreneurs start their business as well and help them with their marketing as well. So you can find us at ourmarketingguide.com.
Ourmarketingguide.com, and you do all kinds of marketing
for all kinds of
people, all kinds of companies.
Yes, we do. I would say the only way that we specialize is that most of our clients are either solopreneurs or small to medium-sized businesses. The larger-sized businesses, they have a marketing department. They don't need someone like us. But those smaller businesses, they tend to need to reach out. Even if they have a marketing person, they tend to like to have fresh eyes to look at a project or to help with something that was overwhelming for their one person or something like that. So those are the kinds of companies that we help.
Well, Sharon, thank you again. And tell Hank thank you for asking you, suggesting to you. Thanks again for allowing me to interview you, and thank you to my listening audience for tuning in every Wednesdays at noon Pacific Standard Time and Saturdays at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, including this one. You can listen to them on our website, davenass.com, and iTunes when you type in Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver. And when you're on my site, please don't forget to take that Are You a Candidate for Burnout quiz, so you can get your free ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So until next week, may God richly bless you. And thank you again, Sharon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.